History through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, presented on the air and online by Provident Payments, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are stories there that should not go untold. It's up to us to make sure they don't go untold. So ask a few questions. Take some time to listen. Maybe this Mother's Day weekend is a great opportunity for that. I guess I probably shouldn't go any further without wishing a happy Mother's Day to all the moms in our audience, including my own mother, who spent some time as an Army nurse in the Vietnam era and really has modeled patriotism for me as long as I can remember. We've heard from quite a few mothers who also happen to be veterans over the years on this program, and we're going to hear the voice of one mother later on. If you caught last week's program, we listened to memories of men who experienced VE Day in Europe during World War II. And I encouraged you to look for 80th anniversary commemorations in your area. For today's program, I thought you might want to hear highlights from some of those ceremonies, one in Washington, D.C., and one in Clovis, California that I got to take part in. You can actually watch both of them in their entirety online. At the National World War II Memorial in Washington, D.C., five World War II veterans were honored guests, including one of the last surviving Navajo code talkers, Thomas Begay. But one of the first things those in attendance got to hear was a poem written and narrated by Hall of Fame football coach Marv Levy, who was a meteorologist in the Army Air Corps in World War II.
I'll remember those days. World War II was over. At last it was done. Oh, how we celebrated. Was it ever fun? Soldiers, sailors, airmen, and Marines in our spiffy dress uniforms flooded the scenes. Pretty girls wearing gloves and cute little hats in high-heeled shoes rather than flats welcomed us now wherever we'd go, on the streets or in bars or at the USO. And when the band played a little brown jug, we'd laugh and we'd flirt and we'd jitterbug. Never since then have we heard anyone sing like Sinatra, Dino, Ella, and Bing. We were young, optimistic, and full of zest. We were up for all challenges, for any test. College days and so much more beckoned us now, and into it we tore. And when those days on campus came to an end, onward we moved toward the road's next bend. Then we got married to that girl we adored, got a job and bought a house we could barely afford. With children, with families, with friends, with delight, we kept surging forward with all of our might. But the years kept passing, and then one day I noticed that my hair was turning gray. So what if I was a little bit older? I just ignored it like the pain in my shoulder. I kept right on enjoying the world that we'd saved from those tyrants so evil and depraved. But now, faster and faster, the years fly by, and many of my dear pals have said goodbye. And even if today's world now considers us old, they should have seen us when we were young and bold. Quite a bit fewer than a million of us still march along, but I'll remember us all, 16 million strong. I'll remember us all as World War II buddies, not as some out-of-date fuddy-duddies. I'll remember that time when we marched off to war and then returned to a world that was better than before. I'll remember all those with whom I served, the greatest generation a title deserved.
What a treat. That was Hall of Fame football coach and World War II veteran Marv Levy. Also speaking at the 80th anniversary of VE Day ceremony at the National World War II Memorial was a Brit who has become perhaps our most prolific modern author when it comes to the topic of American World War II heroics. You've heard him on this program before, Alex Kershaw.
Thank you all for being here today. I wanted to say a special heartfelt thanks to our World War II veterans. I don't think it can hurt to give them another amazing round of applause. And what I find especially heartwarming is the presence of all of these young Americans with us today. Do not forget that it was young Americans just like you who won World War II. Thank you so much for being here today. We live in a free world today because in 1945, the forces of imperfect goodness defeated the forces of near perfect evil. These words belong to Michael DiPaolo, who decades ago, as a French consulate staff member, was addressing US veterans. DiPaolo's words still ring true to this very day. Today, I think of the righteous warriors from this nation and other countries who fought against Nazism. I think of the Red Army soldiers who took Berlin, 1 million casualties in April 1945 alone. I think of the French commandos who landed on D-Day. I think of the Canadians at Dieppe. And I think of the Germans who built a vibrant democracy from the ashes of a shattered nation. I think of the 19 million European civilians who died in World War II, who did not celebrate this day 80 years ago. And I also think of Allied Supreme Commander Dwight Eisenhower. Yesterday, in 1945, Eisenhower sent a message to his bosses here in Washington, the combined chiefs of staff. The mission of this Allied force was fulfilled at 0241 local time, May 7th, 1945. To his dying day, Eisenhower believed in alliances and loathed war as only someone who has lived it can. I also think, of course, of Winston Churchill. Today, 80 years ago, he addressed a vast crowd in London. "This is your victory," he shouted. "It is the victory of the cause of freedom in every land." 80 years later, today, as we gather here at this wonderful place of honor and memorial, we should celebrate the forces, those amazing forces of imperfect goodness. And we should honor victory in Europe by remembering how those forces from nations around this globe joined together to defeat near perfect evil, and to make a far better world. Thank you.
That was author Alex Kershaw at the National World War II Memorial on VE Day. Meanwhile, 2,800 miles away in Clovis, California, exactly 80 years to the minute from when the surrender took effect in Germany, another ceremony featured two World War II veterans who helped secure that victory and a young lady whose life was forever changed because they did that. She and her family saw their lives turned upside down when Hitler came to power. Lorenzo Rios, a Marine turned Army veteran who retired as Lieutenant Colonel, is the CEO of the Clovis Veterans Memorial District.
I want to say thank you for joining us as we commemorate the 80th anniversary of Victory in Europe Day, VE Day, a moment in history that marked the end of tyranny in Europe and the triumph of freedom over fascism. 80 years ago, on May 8, 1945, the guns fell silent across the European continent. After 6 long years of war, Allied forces led by the courage and sacrifice of everyday citizens turned soldiers brought an end to one of the darkest chapters in human history. The cost was staggering, the courage unimaginable, and the legacy everlasting. Today we do more than remember a date. We honor a generation, the greatest generation, whose resilience, unity, and sense of duty saved the world. Their example continues to light our path. They fought not for glory or conquest, but so that future generations might live in peace and liberty and with hope. The video that you just saw as I walked on stage show you how we have worked hard to serve as a permanent living memorial, honoring U.S. military veterans. We provide facilities and support programs like just like this one to promote a legacy of service for preserving our community and country's foundational ideals. That's our mission statement. This is our way of giving back and letting them know those who you see marked on the granite wall of the Garden of Honor, who are no longer with us, that while they may not be with us, their sacrifice mattered, and we're going to do our part to honor their memory by doing something with those freedoms. As we gather here, we're reminded that freedom is never free. It's earned by sacrifice, guarded by vigilance, and strengthened by remembrance. It is our duty, not just today, but every day, to honor those who serve, to care for those who still bear the wounds of war, and to educate the next generation on the meaning of service and sacrifice. Let the 80th anniversary not only be a reflection on the past, but a rededication to the principles for which they fought.
And with that, the crowd took in an excellent video that you can watch online if you wish. It was produced by the Friends of the National World War II Memorial.
80 years ago today, on May 8th, 1945, celebrations erupted around the globe. From the streets of London and Paris to Times Square in New York City, the world rejoiced. World War II in Europe had ended. Freedom had triumphed. It was the greatest chapter in American history. 16 million Americans answered the call, leaving behind their homes, their families, and their dreams. Not to conquer, but to liberate. They fought not for themselves, but to free millions across the globe from tyranny and oppression. But America did not stand alone. Victory was made possible by the strength and sacrifice of our allies, nations united by a shared belief in freedom, democracy, and human dignity. On the beaches of Normandy, in the skies over Europe, and across the battered cities and fields of a war-torn continent, Americans, British, Soviets, Canadians, French, Poles, Australians, and so many others fought side by side, bound together by courage, sacrifice, and trust. Here at home, the American people rallied with an unbreakable spirit. In every town and city, citizens built the weapons of freedom, conserved, rationed, and prayed for those in harm's way. The home front stood shoulder to shoulder with the battlefront, united by duty, hope, and determination. More than 400,000 Americans gave their lives for that victory. They gave up all of their tomorrow so that we, and so much of the world, could live free today. On this VE Day, we honor their sacrifice. We honor the extraordinary alliance of free nations that stood together in humanity's darkest hour. Yet VE Day is more than a remembrance. It is a beacon of hope, a powerful reminder of the enduring strength found in unity and cooperation. As we face new challenges, let us draw inspiration from the greatest generation's courage and commitment to freedom. It is our shared responsibility to carry forward their legacy, teaching future generations the importance of peace, democracy, and vigilance against hatred and intolerance. Today and every day, let us reaffirm our commitment to building a world that honors the sacrifices made by those before us, a world guided by peace, shaped by unity, and driven by hope. They stood united then. We must stand united now.
That unity is something I had the privilege of speaking on last week in Yosemite National Park as part of the American Bar Association's Law Day initiative. But what 300 students really remembered about that day wasn't anything I said, but the chance they had to meet a World War II veteran named Vern Schmidt. There's a new book about Vern's life that you can order online. He decided proceeds should benefit Central Valley Honor Flight. And this VE Day commemoration in Clovis, California came complete with a book signing afterwards. Vern never stopped smiling as he signed copy after copy. But he and two other eyewitnesses to the original VE Day also shared some of their World War II memories. And we'll hear some of that when Hometown Heroes comes right back after this. Hey, do you ever have those moments where you realize you've been settling for less than the best for way too long? Sometimes we just accept the status quo without looking around for better ways to do things. And I gotta tell you, when it comes to your money, I think I've found a better way with EECU. Just take a look at myeecu.org and I think you'll see why. EECU is not a bank. It's a not-for-profit credit union that's all about taking care of you, the member. That's one of the reasons EECU just keeps growing and growing. Over 350,000 members now in 12 different California counties and access to more than 30,000 co-op ATMs and free online and mobile banking. What I love most is how EECU always goes above and beyond to serve the community. A decade ago, the leadership and generosity of EECU helped establish Central Valley Honor Flight. By the end of this year, more than 2,000 veterans will have visited their memorials for free. And that's just one example of the community involvement that EECU takes oh so seriously. Pick up the phone and become a member today. 1-800-538-3328. That's 1-800-538-3328.
Proudly presented by Provident Payments, this is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes. And just a reminder, those two VE Day commemorations we're highlighting today from opposite ends of the country were captured on video, and you can watch them online. You might also be interested in looking up the VE Day ceremonies across the pond in England this week. We heard some excerpts from the observance at the National World War II Memorial in Washington, D.C., but in Clovis, California, thanks to the Clovis Veterans Memorial District and Central Valley Honor Flight, I had the privilege of taking the stage with two World War II veterans, 101-year-old Raymond Lee of the 97th Infantry Division and 99-year-old Vern Schmidt of the 90th Infantry Division, as well as a 94-year-old we can all wish a happy Mother's Day to this weekend, but 80 years ago, she was a German teenager who desperately missed her own mother. Marlena Rafferty was able to shed some light for us on what victory meant in Europe for families like hers in Germany.
I was 7 years old when this war started. I was born before Hitler came into power, and when I was seven, the war started, and everything changed. Life definitely changed for all of us.
What was the biggest change?
Well, the biggest one was, I think, rations, because nothing was there for all of us to enjoy meals to the what we used to do. And when it came, was brought into Berlin, it took hours to receive it, to get it, because there were lines for half an hour before you get your goodies. And with that, that was hard to figure out how can we change those. And the preparation was preparing for the war that included being ready for any bombing attacks with the gas bombs we had. So all of us had to have a gas mask. That included children down to babies. And I still remember when I was seven, I saw these babies with being protected with gas masks. That was something else. And everything had slowed down. And the whole atmosphere was be careful. You had to, when the bombs really came, we rushed to the shelters. We couldn't even make it to the main bunker, just half a mile away. So we went into outer reinforced basements that each apartment had. They reinforced them that we would be safe. We lived on the third floor, and it was constantly being prepared. You didn't even change your clothes. You slept in the clothes because you didn't have time to change to run into the shelter. All the windows had to be blocked off with dark curtains that the light wouldn't shine through, that the planes wouldn't see us. If you took a streetcar, they had in small little areas blanked out with just looking through. Everything else was blocked off with coloring, black coloring. If you took a trip downtown, we lived, when I was four, we moved from downtown of Berlin into a nice suburb. And if we had all our relatives downtown. If we wanted to see anyone, we visited them. But we only had streetcars to go back and forth. Hitler didn't allow us any cars. So when the alarm showed up, we rushed, tried to rush home, and that was the worst, because we made it halfway back to our apartment living, and the streetcar stopped, and then what did we do now? We had to find a spot somewhere, and there were some safety areas, but I can still see the bombs coming down. These are all the reminders that are just with you all your life.
Most of us have never lived through something like that, so I thought it was important that you hear that. And we're going to work towards the relief and the elation that May 8th, 1945 brought, but to really get it, we have to understand what led up to it. And I was reminded, as Marlena shared there, about going into bomb shelters, of a quote that that my grandfather shared with me. He was in the 6th Armored Division in Europe during the war, survived the Battle of the Bulge, got a Silver Star for pulling 26 guys out of burning tanks, and ultimately was part of the liberation of Buchenwald concentration camp. But the VE Day memory that he shared with me ties into what Marlena just said about the bomb shelters. He said on VE Day, he saw a sign outside of a church in Germany, and he spoke 7 languages, so he could read German. And I can't repeat the German, but I remember the English translation. He said that it said outside that German church, the air raid shelter is in the sun. So that's what kind of difference it made on May the 8th. But for you, Marlena, before I move on to the other guys, and I'll come back to you about VE Day, ultimately, your family decided that you had to leave Germany for your own safety, right?
My parents wanted us to attend college. That's how we changed, my sister and I. When you're 10, you take 2 tests, a written and an oral. If you pass it, then you can change from elementary into college, and my sister and I did that. And that meant away from my parents, because they took us out of Berlin. They didn't want those schools, just didn't stay right in the center of Berlin. First East Germany, and then it started bombing badly there. They took us out of the country and into Czechoslovakia. And there we were located an hour out of Prague for 3 years without seeing my parents or my mother and my father. My father's firm also had been taken out of Berlin because of the bombs to West Germany and to a little easier area. And so he was there, my mother in Berlin, and we were over there until I had the bravery to ask if we need to see at least see my mother, because other mothers were allowed to come who belonged to the party, but my parents did not. And so with that in mind, they did let us go home for 2 weeks in January in 45. And that meant they told us what to take, because we couldn't take our things like our little dolls. That was our life with a young girl, and we couldn't take any little flute. We just took what they told us to. We made it to Berlin, but on the way, all by train, on the way in that train were nothing but German soldiers, and I was the oldest one, 13 then. And I couldn't figure out what all these soldiers were doing there, and they told us that they were fleeing from the east, and Berlin is sitting in the middle of East Germany, so they went clear through from the eastern part of Germany, clear to the river Elbe on the left, where the Western Allies were stationed, and they did not want to be caught because the end of the war was coming, and they wanted to get out of there because Russian allies were on their way, and they didn't want to be caught there. So we made it all hours, all day, back to Berlin. My mother didn't know we were coming because nobody had a phone. We wrote to each other once a week, but by 10 o'clock I rang the bell, and there we were. And my dad had told my mother, if you should get the girls home, do not let them go back, because he also heard the end of the war was coming. And so that's exactly what we did. We stayed with my mother, and my father was able to come home for just a little while to see us, but he never made it back to West Germany because the Western Allies, British, American, and French, were already located there. He walked just about all the way back to Berlin because the trains were bombed out. And we made it all together. When the Allies, the Russian Allies, came in, we were together. And that was the blessing for all of us.
And there's so many questions I want to ask you, but I want to move on to the other guys here for a bit too. Just one thing that you said there that I want to highlight for everyone here. You mentioned that other families who were part of the party, and that's the Nazi party, they were able to go, but your parents were opposed to Hitler from the very beginning.
You said it, yes. My father knew there was something not quite that he was going along with, no. And his brother joined, and his best friend, and they said, well, can't be all that bad, because they were all promised food and jobs and whatnot. And that took place, but it didn't last very long. And so my father had something going there in his mind that he said, no, I'm not joining. And therefore, we had to be very careful in what we were saying. Our neighbors, it's all apartment living in Berlin. You just whispered in your own home that nobody would hear you. That was life, and I remember all that. And of course, after the war, it was the shortage of, because when Berlin was then divided into four sectors, we became the British, and the Russians, they closed off everything. There was no deliverance. And America, what did they do? They flew all the food in, and we couldn't say thank you enough. In fact, we thanked them when the bombs came down. We knew America was coming to hell.
And she's still thanking him all these years later. She's wearing this red coat today because she was volunteering earlier today at the Fresno VA Medical Center, which she's done for the last 21 years. And about a decade ago, she was named the National Hospital Volunteer of the Year for that. But we'll get more from Marlena. Vern, let's talk about your story. So what's your first memory of World War II when you were still here in Reedley?
My older brother was already in the Air Force Reserve, and he was called up, and away he went. And I thought, boy, if they need him that bad in the Air Force, they must need me pretty soon. And I graduated from Reedley High School in 1943. I was 17 years old, and I tried my best to enlist in the Air Force because I saw his activities, which I thought were a whole lot easier, maybe a little bit better, than being in an infantry unit, which I wound up in. So, but somehow that never happened, Paul. When my time came, I was ready to leave and be in the Air Force. I got a great big old brown envelope from the president, opened it up, and it says, you have been selected. And I was on, I went into the service immediately, hardly got a chance to say goodbye to even my family. Then I was sent to Camp Roberts and started my basic training there. Along came the Allied forces who landed at Normandy, and things really happened, one, two, three, right behind the other. And pretty soon I received a notice canceling 1 month of my service at Camp Roberts, and gave me a nice piece of paper that says, here's a Greyhound bus and a train ride to the East Coast. So I knew something was beginning to happen.
So you mentioned your brother. Your brother ended up as a prisoner of war, captured during the Battle of the Bulge. And you two, I love when I hear you tell this story, and I heard you tell it to 300 students in Yosemite on Friday, that you and your brother were two of, what, about 40 servicemen from your church in Reedley?
Yeah. Our church there in Reedley had a large moat right behind us here, had all 40 names of our church members and some family members who all went into World War II. Their names were there, and someone in that church, including my mom and my dad, someone in that church every single day in their home were on their knees mentioning those 40 names. Every single one came home, I shouldn't say unharmed, because my brother suffered my brother was wounded both in his face and in his back, never received even an aspirin, but anyway, he survived. And one of my friends over there was wounded pretty badly, and he came home. So out of those 40, because of the faithfulness of these parishioners there in the church, on their knees every single day, someone of those 40 called our names, asking the good Lord to watch over us. And like I say, every single one of those 40 came back home as a testimony. So I'm grateful for people who probably didn't know us personally, but mentioned our name. And the good Lord knew all about it and answered their prayer. So we're grateful for that.
That story gets me every time. That is 99-year-old Vern Schmidt, an amazing veteran I first met 20 years ago now. He is as sharp as ever, and I do hope to dedicate an upcoming episode to Vern and the new book about his life. That book is called A Hero and Advocate for All Others. You can find it on Amazon, and we have it linked for you at hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. Another new book features close to 36 World War II veteran stories captured by a longtime Hometown Heroes listener, Arnold Martinez. We're going to talk about that on a future episode as well. Arnold's book is called Never Forget, The Final Stories from the Greatest Generation. It's time for our final break, but when we come back, more from the voices we were just listening to, plus a 101-year-old who still mows his own lawn. True story. Hometown Heroes will be right back after this. When prices start going up, we all look for ways to save. So here's a simple message for you. Look no further than EECU. Did you know you can finance your mortgage through EECU? How about a home equity line of credit? EECU makes HELOC loans easy. And when the car business is all over the map, the auto loan rates are as steady as can be. EECU is a not-for-profit credit union, not a bank. So the members always win. Go to myeecu.org to become a member today, or call 1-800-538-3328.
Honoring veterans from sea to shining sea, you're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler, brought to you by this local station and its sponsors, and presented everywhere, on the air and online, by Provident Payments, one of the fastest growing payment consultants in America. Connect today at providentpayments.com.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, sharing highlights today from the 80th anniversary of VE Day and ceremonies that took place in Washington, D.C. and in Clovis, California, where I also got to introduce the crowd to a veteran you met here on Hometown Heroes several years ago. Ray Lee is 101 now. He still mows his own lawn, but his hearing is a thing of the past. Out of 20,000 Americans of Chinese ancestry who served in World War II, he's one of the last ones still with us.
I can't answer the question, I can't hear, but I can talk. My name is Raymond Lee. I was born in San Francisco, Chinatown. Came to Fresno when I was about 8 years old, 6 or 8 years old, on the west side. I was raised on the west side, went to Lincoln School, went to Edison, and then my dad had a restaurant in Colego. So we moved the family over to Colego, so I continued my education in eighth grade and graduated in class of 42. Then I'm trying to get in the service. I tried the Navy. They said they had the quota all filled. So I tried the Air Force. They said they're all filled up. Then I went to the Army draft course. They take me. I want to go in the service. They took me without any question. So I was put 3 years in the service, and I got a good education.
He got sent to Europe as a medic with the 97th Infantry Division. They actually had Ray clearing minefields for a while before he ever treated casualties. But he and Vern, these two guys here, 99 years old, 101, they both witnessed the liberation of Flossenbürg concentration camp, the very same concentration camp. And one of the questions that I had written out for Ray here that he's looking at now is, what was the closest call he remembers in Europe? Let's see what he has to say.
Well, we were in the three, four of us in the courtyard. We were shooting a bull. You know how the GI had nothing to do but shoot the bull. Pretty soon we heard a boom. I said, holler, incoming shell. Well, the four of us hit for the house. And funny thing, while they had steps, concrete steps, all four of us piled up on the step trying to get in the house. And we got out and started laughing. It was funny. I still remember everything, what I went through. I still remember. You just can't forget your buddies and things like that. I see a lot of stuff that we never see before. I don't want to talk about it.
So, Vern, I'm going to come back to you. Now, Ray had shared with me in the past some of his memories of the concentration camp and the survivors, and he actually came across a Jewish prisoner that they had some Jewish soldiers in their unit who could translate the Yiddish, and this person told him that he was the only survivor out of a group of 30, and the condition that he was in was jarring to Ray's senses. And you saw some people in that kind of condition, too, when you liberated Flossenbürg, didn't you?
Yes, I certainly have. And kind of hard to talk about what you saw because of the emaciated people. No food, no medical care. Nothing. You're herded like a bunch of cattle, and I've seen some even pick up grass to eat. You know, that's pitiful. You're on your last legs when it gets down to that bad. But these people out of the Flossenbürg camp had been exited out of there before we got there. We were told that we would face probably up to 16,000 people tomorrow. Well, when tomorrow came, we found that these guys had exited already probably at least a week before we got there. But the message was, they're there today, you'll see them tomorrow. But the only ones we found the next day was about 130 of them. They were so ill, so emaciated, they were left there because they couldn't get out of bed. Pitiful people. And a number of them died just while we were there. And our unit actually made a cemetery. I've been back there. The cemetery is there today where these people were actually taken and placed into a cemetery with some honor and respect. I have to say, us Americans, we might have been called the ugly American, but we did things nobody else would do over there to help the people. And I'm so glad I had just a little part of that. Going as we left Flossenbürg and were trying to find where these 16,000 were, we finally caught up with some of them. We would, as we walked along, we would maybe see a leg sticking out of the ground or an arm sticking out of the ground. They They just kicked you off to the side of the road, scraped a little dirt away, and buried you right there as you went. And some of the German officials would go into a home and change their uniform into a civilian so that they would save their own neck again. So it was a tough time, and to see our people and to see their people, how they were treated. And the 90th Division actually set up a field hospital out on this death march and brought Germans into there and helped treat them and nourish them and feed them whatever they needed. I'll have to say, the statement calling us the ugly American, I didn't see that. I saw the American who had compassion, as this lady mentioned a while ago, watching out for our people.
And I'll come back to Marlena to get her VE Day memory. Why don't you think about what you remember about May 8th, 1945, and where you were, and we'll get that from you in a second. But Marlena, for you, what do you remember about 80 years ago today, what happened that day, and what it still means to you now?
It means the world to me. I cannot say thank you enough to America and all the veterans, because this is what we needed. There was no food, hardly. My mother and my aunt would take a train tour with whatever they could take that they didn't need anymore, and ride out to the farmers for an hour to find out if they can have some food that they were growing for the few items that they took along. That's how we were able to make it for a while. But after Berlin was divided into four sections, life started again, because we became the British area. And with that in mind, our school started again, and we finished it. Of course, I had 6 years of English. I wanted to use that English. Do you want me to go into that now?
About how you ended up in the States?
Sure. I wanted to use English, maybe going to an American embassy to interpret. But Oxford English was not enough. It was a good way to learn English, but to form sentences, you had to have a teacher who spoke only English with you, but he was not that kind. And so I had a year of French, and that French teacher told us, you guys can talk long German with my French only for 1 month and no more German. And boy, did we learn French. That was great, but English was the other way around. So after I graduated, I decided to go to England as a nanny and learn that way. Within a month, you didn't speak German anymore, you spoke only English. And what you didn't know, the word, where do you put it? You never forgot that one word. That's how you learned it, within a month or two or three. By that time, 3 years, I decided it was time now to go home and find a job, whatever I thought I wanted to do. But I made a little bit more extra money in London in a sanatorium type, and they asked me if I thought going into nursing. And I said, well, actually, I watched the nurses. The thought came to me. And that's exactly what I did. I went home, visited with my parents, went back to London. 2 years there, that included 3 years in Boston, Massachusetts. And that's how I first came to America. I loved it. The East Coast was great. I didn't just learn how to do a good way of nursing, but also I saw Washington, D.C., and New York, and all the eastern part. And the training was 3 years, but I had 3 months left to go, and I decided with another German girl, I was the one that decided, let's see more of America. I wanted to see San Francisco. So we went daily for 4 weeks by Greyhound. And Greyhound took us on and off. We got off when we wanted to see that area overnight, then next morning back on the bus. And we made it to San Francisco. But Yosemite was coming up, and so we decided to go and look at that beautiful Yosemite. Picked up the bus again in Merced, and that was a different life that started for me then. The bus driver that I had became my husband. What happened was he watched us getting on his bus, and then he was very friendly and talked to us, and then he thought of showing us San Francisco, because he came from Marin County. Do you know it? No. Well, I can show you all the way around. So Sue and I, we said okay, but he had to sign in first, and we had something to take care of too, and he said, we'll meet there. Okay, well, I never found the guy again. And with that in mind, we looked and looked and looked. We walked to the hotel, and after an hour or two, we tried for people, two of them, to show us around. One was married to an American, and she said, I'll show you around now. Well, she couldn't do it that day, that night, not the next day, and the other girl wasn't even home, so we decided we'll go and see what, on our own, what we can find in San Francisco. We got out of the hostel. We asked how to get to Fisherman's Wharf. Well, make a left, a right, and that bus driver, he said, okay, wait right here, and we'll take you. On the way walking to that, two drivers came by, and one of them was Evett. After an hour or two or three, and he showed us all of San Francisco. And the next morning, they had to leave again, and we had 2 days there. We went back. I had only a student visa. I had to go back to Germany, and he proposed 3 months later, and I came back, and that was in 59. Had 41 great years, and it is, and he was in the Navy, 4 years, World War II. So from then on, everything developed. I could join the VFW, and that's what I'm doing now. It's an honor to help the veterans, and it's an honor to know so many wonderful people. Thank you very much.
Well, and I just have one more question for you, Marlena, since it is the 80th anniversary of VE Day, and I think you're the only one in the room who lived through what the Third Reich had done to your homeland and the rest of Europe. Can you describe for us the emotions that you experienced 80 years ago today when you knew that that regime, that dictator, that form of tyranny had been defeated?
We can't say thank you enough that came about, to dictate. And in school we have a dictature, that is a dictation. That's something that they tell you what to write. And that means the same to me today. And I just can't go along with that. We have to have that freedom. And that was our plan at that time. And I mean, so many people were for him. They clapped it. But there were a lot of people that also wanted it. Decent way of living.
Well, and a lot of Americans and Canadians and Brits and so many paid the price for that freedom. Marlena said she's going to write a book. Her daughter's honored to write a book, so maybe we can have another book signing in the future. But Vern's going to be signing books in just a few minutes. I asked you to think about your VE Day memory to share with us. What do you remember about that day? Where were you and what happened?
We were in the Czech Republic or Czechoslovakia at that time, and we knew we were getting close to the end because the Germans were beginning to give up. And also we knew we were pretty close to the Russians. And we wanted to get as far into Czechoslovakia as we could because those people, the Czechs, had really been persecuted, not only by the Germans, but they really weren't excited about the Russians coming in. Now, they were supposedly on our side, and I disagree with that. All they wanted from the Americans was what they could get in money and vehicles and tanks and whatever they could use that they didn't have to supply themselves. You may not disagree with that, but I saw it. And I don't think they ever were our friends, only on name and what we could do for them. But so we, on May the 8th, we were pretty well deep into Czechoslovakia. We were almost to their capital and to seal it off totally. And the Czechs were so excited to see the Americans. They opened their homes to us, made pastry and food and good stuff that Marlene talked about for us. And I can't say enough. I've been back 8 times. I've probably been back in the Czech Republic probably at least 3 or 4 times with my family and participated in one of their largest annual parades that they commemorate their liberation and their association with the American GI. The one this year, I obviously couldn't attend, but they asked my daughter to come and take a few words and send it over there. So my picture and also a few words of comment was sent over there somehow. I don't, you know, we got so much stuff anymore. I don't know how all this electric stuff works. But anyway, in their parade, my picture came up as they were going into one of the big cities. They have a screen probably like this one behind us. And my picture and my story came up there to thanking those people again. They are so grateful. I'm in touch with a number of families. In fact, just today I had an email from one of them. They are so grateful for what we brought them their freedom. And I'm glad I had a little tiny part in that on VE Day for the people of Czech. And of course, the rest of Europe over there joined in, as Marlene mentioned. Grateful for the ugly Americans, so to speak. We made friends. They learned who the real American guy really is.
Let's have one more hand for Marlena, for Vern, and for Ray Lee. I think you got to hear most of what was shared on stage there, but again, if you'd like to watch that observance or the National World War II Memorial Ceremony in Washington, D.C., we have those links for you at hometownheroesradio.com or on Facebook, just type in Hometown Heroes Radio. Thank you for listening today. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you again that freedom is not free.
To let Paul know about a veteran in your life, visit hometownheroesradio.com and click on Suggest a Veteran. Today's program has been brought to you by Provident Payments. Give your business the edge only their personalized service can deliver at providentpayments.com.